to ask is, what is it that's being transmitted to us? What is it that's under discussion? Is it an issue that goes to the core of the controlling principle? Say, if we're talking about Bishul, and our gezeiros are about Bishul, so do the gezeiros tell us something about Bishul, or are they arguing about something Bishul-related? Or is the argument about how the drabbanans in general work, and what are other issues at hand that might be influencing what's going on? So let's try to get a little bit of a perspective of that and see how much we can accomplish in the time we have. So what drabbanans do we have when it comes to Bishul, in the hair area of Bishul? So we have a bunch. Right? There is a gzeira of Hatmana. There is a gzeira called Shihiyah. There is Hanacha. And there is Hachzara. Now, those may not all be separate things. They have four separate words. There may be overlaps between them. It could be that there may be different forms of the same gzeira included within that list. That's something we'll have to try to figure out. And so, for example, Hatmana, which we're not going to start with, but just to discuss what it is. And so what does Hatmana mean? Hatmana means that you're taking an item that is hot and you are wrapping it in something, literally hiding it in something, that will preserve its heat. So that's a gzeira that we're afraid is going to come to your doing further acts of actual bishul to this item. Because of your efforts to preserve its heat, you're showing that you're interested in its cooking status, and that may take you further along that path in a dangerous way. So we have a gzeira such as that, and the other gzeiras may be different, may be related. There are those among the Rishonim who understand Shihiyah as being a function of Hatmana in a different form. So what is Shihiyah? Right, Shihiyah is, in other contexts, delaying or leaving. And in this context, it means that you're leaving food from before Shabbos on the fire. Which opens up itself all kinds of interesting questions. Now, midoraisa, that's for sure mutter, right? And if you recall, we spoke about in our introductory discussions about the whole question of how malachos operate. Do malachos address a situation, or is it only about the individual being at rest? So some of the Achronim actually say, just for a synergistic moment here, that part of the proof that the Holy Sod that we mentioned that a lot of the Achronim like, that malachos of Shabbos, the Isser is on the individual. So they bring a proof from this halacha, that min haTorah, I could leave food on an oven before Shabbos and let it go into Shabbos that way, and that's not going to violate any Issur Malachas, even though I have cooking taking place on Shabbos, but I'm allowed to do that because I'm passive. So that's true on a level of Min HaTorah, on a level of Midrabanan, so it gets more complicated. So in reference to this specific point, it's interesting actually, that it's a little bit counterintuitive, that we have an instinct, which makes sense, that dinim d'oraisa are more chomer than dinim d'rabbanan. So we always expect that the dinim d'oraisa, everything's going to be more stringent. But it doesn't necessarily follow that way. Because, yes, it means that the rules are more severely applied. We're machmir by Darais is more than Darabanans, but even that's not absolutely true. It's a little bit of a confusing topic, because every once in a while the Gemara will say that the Chazal were especially Machmir on their dinim because they didn't want to come to Zilzul or something like that. And the Achronim try to figure out, when do you say one, when do you say the other, when do you say Safik Darabanan Lahaka, when do you say we're more Machmir by the Darabanan because of a concern of Zilzul. It's not an easy issue. But either way, that means that whatever rules we have are addressed more severely, Safik Lahachmer, etc. But there may be rules that play out in a way that's more chamer by drabanans than by deraisas. And this is one of them. This whole issue that we've said in terms of the malachos of Shabbos that you have to be active when you're doing them. That's Yisroel in the Malacha. So that may not apply at all when we're dealing with Rabbanans. So that's where it's a little bit counterintuitive, that Rabbanans, it could be that rule goes out the window. It could be that we don't have any such concern, or we don't have any such necessity, that it has to be something that is active on your part, and it could be that it's possible for you to passively violate a din de Rabbanan. This is comes up in the context of a lot of the Rabbanans. For example, Schechter often makes reference to the Eglei Tal's position in terms of the Gzeira of Rafua, which we didn't talk about so much this year. We talked about it 2 years ago. But there is a Gzeira de Rabbanan not to engage in Rafua on Shabbos. And the Eglei Tal maintains that that doesn't mean just that you're doing something, but even if you are a passive recipient of Rafua, so then that's still included in the Gzeira, because the Gzeira de Rabbanan could apply even passively. So this issue of Shehiyah probably illustrates it most powerfully, because that's the whole nature. Shehiyah itself, the whole word, is passive in its very nature. It conveys passivity, and yet that's where you have this Issa de Rabbanan. Now, when you have an Issa called Hanacha, or Hachzara, of putting something onto the oven on Shabbos, or returning something onto an oven on Shabbos, so one question we're going to have to try to keep in mind is, so what's the difference? Right. So presumably, if there's an issue of Shehiyah, so any act of placing something anew or returning something to the fire is going to include Shehiyah. So is that it? Is it just a different form of Shehiyah? So first of all, no, because we'll see there are more chumras that clearly seem to speak to something else. But that allows us also to consider a whole different aspect. So when it comes to Shehiyah, so we have essentially one issue. But once we're talking about placing something on Shabbos, and we are identifying an action, so then that action opens up potential for other issues to be involved. Hi.
I mean, it's, if I'm not mistaken, so Shehiyah, we said, is when I leave it from before Shabbos, right?
Right.
So that's different from Hachzara, obviously.
I mean, well, like, but Hachzara maybe includes Shehiyah, right? So once you put something onto the fire on Shabbos, so now you have a situation that's equal to Shehiyah, at least.
Yeah? I mean, but I'm talking about Hachzara is when I take it off and put it back on now.
Right. Then again, you have a situation which is equal to Shehiyah. Right. Once you're putting something, if you have a problem with having something on the oven, so then for sure you have the problem when you put it on the oven on Shabbos. Both of them have you end up with having something on the oven.
It could be
so. Okay, okay. It could be that. No. It could certainly be more chumra, and then we'll see.
Right. I mean, like, she's on. Yeah. Okay.
Right. But part of. Sorry.
Right. I guess like it could take on like a new element. But I guess. Yeah.
Right. So that's something we want to see. So is it just that it has a continuation of the issues in Shehiyah, and maybe more actively, or is there a whole new issue that's being brought up? And we'll see that that's the topic of Machlokes Rishonim. Then maybe there are additional concerns. Well, what is the concern with Shehiyah? Let's just look quickly at the Gemara itself. This is Machlokes, Hananya, and Rabbanan. Right, so the Mishnah, Mamed Vav Med Beis, which I assume you also have that, I think was the very beginning of the Mamed Kamos. So if you have a Kira, so Akira, if you're familiar, if you look, for example, in the Baruviat's book, so he has very helpful pictures. Right. So what is Akira? Akira is a oven that's a old-style oven. It's different than the ovens that we have today, understandably. So essentially, they would have pots, and the pots would go into this structure, basically like a bima with a hole in the top and holes in the bottom, and that would be essentially their oven. But how do we translate an oven conceptually? An oven is a box that provides heat in which food then placed in that box becomes cooked. So nowadays we can do that in many fancy ways. We can do that with microwaves too. But historically you don't have all that technology, so you just have the box. And where does the heat come from? So the heat comes from the heat source. I guess that's kind of a tautology. But so our Mishnah talks about whether it's embers or whether it's straw or stubble or kindling or something like that. So you put something in there that transmits heat to that holds fire, and then you have pots on top of it, and the pots will have their contents get cooked. So it's structure was. They used to have could hold two pots in one. So let's say this whole desk was up here, and you have a pot here and a pot there, and the pots had handles, so the handles allowed it to stay on top of the kira while the pot itself would go inside of it. So if you had a kira shesiku of akasha begvava, so if you just used, let's say, straw or stubble, so then, okay, so that's not a flame, and then you could leave a item on that over the course of Shabbos. That would be okay. No snelea tavshil. Of the gethes of the eitzim, if you have wood or if you have coal, something like that. So now here's the problem. Lo yitein ad she yigrof, o ad she yitein es ha'afar. Right? That's what's known as grufa o ketuma. So you cannot leave it there in the circumstance in which it's going to be on the flame. So how do you deal with a flame? So either you get rid of the source, you take away the coals, or, which may not be what you want to do, because presumably you have it there for reasons of its heat properties, or you cover it up with ashes. So what's this nowadays? We don't have that option, so what do we use nowadays? That's the blech. Right, so blech is a later invention, but as the Magen Avraham explains, right, that is the modern form of grufa ketuma. So nowadays, as far as relating it to our experience, so whenever we see grufa ketuma here, so we think blech in terms of modern terms. But so that's what you'd have to do. You'd have to either take away the coals or cover them up. And Beishamai omrim chamen aval lo tavshil. So Beishamai says that this applies only to tavshil, but not to chamin. That water is representative of the Easter, applies to water, but not to tavshil, the way around. That Beis Hillel omrin chamin v'tavshil. Beis Hillel says both. V'shamer omrin noklin avalo machzirin. Beis Hillel omrin maf machzirin. So the Gemara asks about this. Dan, ibayaluhu haylo yitain lo yachzirhu. So this idea of lo yitain, so really what does that mean? It means hafzara. It means that you shouldn't put it on. Avalishos mashinin. Afalpi she'eno garif eno katan. But if it's just a question of leaving it there, so that you could do even without a blach, even without grufa ketuma. So is that really the case? So whose opinion is that? So Mani Chananyahu, that's Chananya's opinion. Tanya Chananya Omer Kol Shum Kamaychol Ben Drusai. He's not saying this across the board, but he's assuming that already it's been cooked, at least Kamaychol Ben Drusai. So Mutter Lashaoso Al Gabe Kira. Then under those circumstances, you can leave it on the oven. Afal Pisha Eno Garuf Eno Katan. Then you can leave it even if it's not blechized, even if it hasn't had that treatment to it. Oh, Dilma, maybe we say, no, that's not how we should interpret it. But l'shaus tanan, we're talking about shehiyah as well, even leaving it. And even under those circumstances, v'i garuf v'katam in, I lo lo, v'kol shekei l'hachzir. All the more so, l'hachzir. Like we indicated before, that hachzara seems to include an act of shehiyah, and therefore if we prohibit shehiyah, then all the more so we prohibit hachzara. And that kol shekei is very easy to understand. In light of what we said before, right, that certainly you'd expect that if something is passively prohibited, then especially on Shabbos with our sensitivity to a maisa, and certainly if you're doing a maisa, that all the more so would seem to have a issue. And that would be true really in all areas of life, that we assume that active is always worse than passive in terms of the transgression. So if we say you violate something even by leaving it there, then certainly putting it there in the first place would seem to be a problem. If the culture came, we could understand on a couple of different levels. So this machlokis, Chananya and Chachamim, is a major issue of halacha. And parenthetically, who do we paskin like? So it's not so clear. The truth is, this was a major machlokis HaRishonim had a paskin. So many Rishonim did paskin like Chananya, which would be a pretty big kula, that you wouldn't have an Issur Shehiyah once the food was already cooked, Kamaychol Ben Drusai, which would have a pretty big impact. But Halacha L'maisa, again, it's a machlokas, and the minig has been to be machmer on this. The minig.
Why don't we assume that the Rabbanan are the majority, like
So that's a good question. So why do those Rishonim who paskin like Hananiah paskin like him? It's a fair question. See if we can get some perspective on that. Obviously, a basic kali apsak. Why shouldn't we just say it's a slam dunk for the bun? So many of the Rishonim did say like that, and that may also contribute to why the minig is like that. But in practice, so the position of Rabbanan is what we're familiar with in terms of practice, either because you hold like that maker aden, or because that's become the minig, even if there is what to rely on among the Rishonim to paskin like Hananiah. So what's the concern having something on the fire? What's the issue with that? So the Gemara has Shema Yachid B'Cholom as a concern. So this appears in the Gemara. I don't remember if I put, I think I had this in the Makomos earlier. I apologize if it never was. I think it was. Daf Yud Ches. Right, this is a Gemara on Daf Yud Ches in the Beis, where the Gemara talks about that in our first parak, towards the end of the first parak. And it's not 100% explicit. What is the issue with Yachdiv Chala? And so we're worried that you might come to stoke the coals. So what's the problem with stoking coals? And what's the problem with that? Oh, so it could be that it's a bishul issue, right? That constitutes an active bishul, right? So then we've kind of moved from passive bishul to active bishul, which may allow us to actually then go into an Isser Daraisa territory. So maybe that's the whole gezeira. The whole gezeira is don't passively be mevashel because you'll come to actively be mevashel, which is an Isser Daraisa. Right, especially we talked about how there's an issur of magis, right? So stirring is also considered to be an active bishul. So especially if we understand, like we spent some time setting the framework of what bishul is. So if every action that brings bishul closer is a maisa bishul, so then maybe that's what we're afraid of, possibly.
That's not everyone agrees with all those steps, though, right? Most of people might not be your shaya to.
Well, Moshe Pevel, we have to figure out what exactly is its role. Moshe Pevel is a phrase that we find in some of the context. So, for example, we're talking about Hatmana. And in a few contexts, it's not necessarily clear whether or not that is the problem or that's the motivation for the problem. Right? That's a part of what we also have to figure out here. That are we worried when we talk about, this will come up more in a second, but when we talk about the desire that the individual might have to cook the food further, is that the problem, or that's why there may be a different problem? So the issue of being Moshe Pevel in this context might mean that because he wants to increase the flame, he wants to increase the heat, so then he'll do this, and this is the problem. Not the Moshe Pevel is the problem, but this part is the problem. So what is this? So maybe it is an issue that's a Maisa Bishul itself, which is a possibility. Which it sounds like from Rashi over here on Yud Ches Amud Beis. And so just Rashi is very brief here, but Rashi Yachtib B'Kachalim, Rashi says two words at the top of Yud Ches Amud Beis, L'maher Bishuach. That you're going to want to speed up the cooking. But you could argue on how to read this, as some had. Right? So in terms of what I just said, is that the Isser or is that the motivation? Rashi could just be saying that you're going to want to speed it up, so therefore you're going to stoke the coals, and that is a problem for some other reason. What other reason? Maybe it's mavir. And maybe we're worried about something completely else, and that we could even relate to a little bit more with our modern ovens. Right? If the modern equivalent is we're going to turn the flame up and turn it down, so then presumably we have other malachas that are involved. We have a mother involved. So maybe this concern is not really a visual concern. It's a concern of a different malach. So that's going to make a difference as far as some of the lumdas here. Because we don't really have a clear statement of what the issue is. And it's interesting, if you look around both in the Svarim, the Hebrew Svarim, and the English treatments, it's interesting how hard it is to find someone focusing on specifically why this is a concern. So okay, Chitur Gecholah, or what is Chitur Gecholah? So that's going to be relevant in terms of what's the issue. Is that will itself be an act of bishul? Or that maybe it's a different consideration. Maybe it's a consideration of maver. Again, we can relate to that even more with our modern ovens, where that's more clearly going to be what's going on if we would turn the flame on. Hi.
Hi.
But, I mean, your first initial thought would be if we're talking about yachta and cholav yachta upon that you're talking about increasing, mm-hmm. That would be my first initial thought, no? I mean,
so therefore what?
Therefore it sounds like the issue is more visual related.
I didn't follow that. You said because
it's about increasing the heat, increasing the flame of like cooking, right?
Right.
So why isn't that more...
So that could itself be an act of Havara, depending on the context. Or it could be that if it's about Bishul, so then maybe it doesn't involve Havara. Maybe it involves just moving around the coals in a way that shifts things, and it wouldn't somehow be Havara. And maybe it doesn't matter. Maybe anything, even if there's no other Malachi involved, then maybe that itself is an act of Bishul, in light of what we saw at the Gemara in Beitzer with that listing of all the different partners in the act of Bishul. So maybe that's what's going on. So this Rashi leaves us with ambiguity, because Rashi could be telling us, and it's symbolic of the whole concern here. So Rashi, in his two words, is a stand-in for this whole issue. That is Rashi explaining the motivation, or is Rashi telling you that would be yes, sir. Maher Bishulon, the Maher Bishulon, that's the Malacha. So it's not 100% clear. So in any event, we have this concern of Chitu B'Cholam, and apparently Hanani is concerned about it less than Rabbanan are concerned. And how does Grufa Ketumah help? So Grufa, we understand how it helps. If there's no Gechalim, so then it's not so likely you're going to do it. But how does Grufa help? How does Ketumah help, rather? How does covering it up help?
Because it cools it down or shows the intent. Maybe it's not...
Okay, so cooling it down is relevant a little bit. Simon is relevant also. So the Ran's language is that it's a Simon. It'll be a hecker, basically. That it will remind you. So, in general, it's also, like I said, there's a lot to glean about Yisurim Drabanan and their whole philosophy from the dinim that we have here, so it's an opportunity to look at that. And so, in general, we talk about Gezeiras Drabanan, so we're not here for the mazik. We're not here to try to protect somebody from willfully sinning, because somebody who willfully sins is going to do it anyway. So we're concerned about accidents or mistakes or forgetting. So a hecker could be helpful to that extent. We don't necessarily have to make something impossible, like in the context of Grufa. It's enough maybe to make it evident. It's interesting, by the way, so especially if you're learning Daf Yomi, so topics of Ein Gozrin Gezeira L'Gezeira that comes up. So the whole question is, why is it that Chazal don't make a gzera l'gzera? And is it that they can't, or they don't have the power to, or they don't want to? It's a whole discussion of itself. So the Minchas Elazar says the reason Chazal don't make a gzera l'gzera, because that would mean that the Rabbanan and the Rabbanan that will make a gzera to stop you from violating the Rabbanan. So says the Minchas Elazar, why are we so scared about that?
So for the
well, not just Amadev herself, that could be an issue, that could be another reason to say it, but he says more fundamentally that this is a little bit of a controversial principle, but we've mentioned in the past, we talked about Yisuri Chefetz and Yisuri Gavra by the Rabbanans, we've mentioned that a couple times, so the idea that the Rabbanans are only Yisuri Gavra, not Yisuri Chefetz, that it's only about a prohibition to rebel against Chazal rather than anything inherently bad. So this is all based on a comment of the Nesivus, that the Nesivus seems to say that if one violates an Isser Drabbanan B'shogeg, if one inadvertently violates a Drabbanan, so then there's no kapara that makes any sense. There's no kapara that's necessary. That when we have a Din Daraisa, so sometimes we find that if somebody violates a Daraisa, even if he does a B'shogeg, so he's not subject to an Onish, but there is a kapara that needs to take place. There's still a stain. When you're dealing with a Drabbanan, so the Nesivus seems to assert, the language is a little vague, that's why I'm using this vague statement, but he seems to assert that if you violate a Drabbanan, B'shogeg, there's no kapar necessary. And the way he was explained by the later Achronim is that a Drabbanan, according to him, is nothing inherent, it's not actually doing anything bad, it's all about not rebelling against Chazal. So if you're not doing it on purpose, if it's inadvertent, so you're not rebelling. So the whole the way it's been developed, this idea, is that the whole thrust of an Issur d'Rabbanan is all about your intent to defy Chazal's command. And if you're not knowingly doing it, so then you really haven't done anything wrong at all. So based on that, the Minchas Elazar says, so who are gezeiros made for? Gezeiros are made for the shogeg. Gezeiros is not made for the mezid, because somebody who wants to sin the mezid is going to do it. He's not going to stop because you have a fence in between. So the whole thrust of the gezeiros are for the shogeg. So says the Minchas Elazar, why should we have a gezeira to stop you from doing a derabbanan b'shogeg? If you're going to do the Rabbanan b'shogeg, then it's not going to be an aver anyway. And not everyone accepts this whole principle, but that's the way he understands it. So, that being the case, so once we assume that the gezeira is for the shogeg and not for the mezid, so maybe a heker is enough. Now, the Rambam's language is a little bit different. Also, remember if I put the Rambam on the Marva Komus or not. But you could pretend that it is. And we'll look at it together. So the Rambam's language was, towards the end of Halacha Dalet, he talks about what you do. So the Fikach and Dara Fa'esh, Shakisa, Shakira, the offer of the Oris Pishtan, Hadaka, Shamu Hadichalim. So if you do all, and he describes all kinds of different ways in order to either cool down the embers or get rid of them, etc., etc. So if you did that, then you can leave the food on top of it. Why? It shows that he's no longer paying attention to it. That if he's essentially turning off the flames, right, and I think as Yosef mentioned that the flames will now be less powerful. So then we don't have to worry. Any dozer in Shem Yachta Bay, you don't have to worry he's going to do anything because he is Mesiach Das from it. So in that sense, it also again flows directly from Hatmana, and as we'll mention, that there is a possibility that Hatmana and Shehi are very related. That Hatmana, our concern is that your attention to it and wrapping it up is going to be dangerous, that your extra focus of attention, that your food should stay hot, is something that could lead you down a path of malacha. And here as well, you could say the opposite, that if you're Mesiach Das from it, then that's going to be what will protect you, and the blech will be Mesiach Das from the fire, the ketum will be Mesiach Das from it. Okay, so what are Hananya and Chachamim arguing about? So we mentioned in our opening comments about Bishul the Merkevus HaMishnah. You may remember the Merkevus HaMishnah where he has a statement that even though we have a Machlokas HaRishonim about cooking past Michael Ben Drusoy, which we'll talk about in a second, but he says that anything that could be eaten raw is mutter to cook, right? A comparison to the shalaka. So in this context, in this part of the same statement, he says the machlokas between Hananya and Chachamim is about the Isser of Bishul. Right? Do we say that Hananya even acknowledges that if it's less than Michael Ben Drusoy, you have a problem? Right? Hananya Rusoy is only talking about after Michael Ben Drusoy. So the whole machlokas between him and Chachamim is from that point on. After Michael Ben Drusoy, where there's more to be cooked, and it's not at a point which we call mitzdamek viralo, that once the food hits the level where if it's going to shrink any further, if it's going to be heated anymore, it's going to evaporate, that it's going to be bad. So at that point, so then no one's interested in heating up the coals or in advancing the process because any further cooking is going to be negative. But in between Michael Ben Drusoy and the Stamik Varavo, so is there an Issa Deraisa to cook? And so we saw that the Rambam maintains yes. And the other Rishonim likely disagree. So the Merkevus HaMishnah asserts that that's the Machlokas here. that Hananya holds there's no Isser Daraisa past Mechel Ben Drusai. So what do you have to be concerned about? While Chachamim maintain, no, like the Rambam, that there is a Nisa Daraisa even at that point. And therefore, we have to worry about that. Now, the Rashba has a different perspective. The Rashba comes on the Marmar Komos. So, again, in terms of focusing on why Nisa Darabana takes place, so one issue you want to understand with the Rabbanan is what are we worried about in terms of the Avera? What Avera is present? So that's the Merkabah Mishnah's point, that is there an Esser D'Oraisa here or not? That's what we want to know. But we could also focus on something else. We could also focus on the motivation. So according to the Rashba, that's what the Machlokas is. That do we have to be concerned under these varying circumstances for Yachta B'chol? Then Hananiah's position was that after Michael Ben Jusoy, it's not really a concern. That's not something that we have to factor in. And Chachamim disagreed. Chachamim felt that that is something to worry about. Now again, if cooking at that point is not Nistar D'Oraisa, so then so what? Even if we have to worry about it, so what's the issue? So maybe Yachta B'Chalim is about something else. Maybe Yachta B'Chalim is about Mavir. Now, if the issue is that you're not really subject to cooking D'Oraisa, so then presumably it's not a problem. But we'll have to see if that's the only way to see it. So that's a possible approach, two possible approaches to what this Machlokas is about. Now, once we enter into Hachzara or into Hanacha, so, like we said before, so you could say, all right, that's just super shahir. Right, that's shahir with an action. Maybe we'll have more chumras to it. Right? Most notably, for example, so Hachzara applies, Hanacha applies even with a black. Right? There are other heterim, but Grufa Ketuma is not going to automatically allow it. So, what's the difference there? Why should we say that that's not going to help? So it could be just a function of the extra severity involved, even though we'll say that it's still the same concern. And in both cases, we're concerned about Chitoy B'Chalim. Shehi is a concern about that, and Achzar Hanacha is certainly a concern about that. But because it's got this active component to it, so we have Chumras associated with it that we're using here. But it could be, once we're talking about a Maisa now, that maybe we're opening up a new possibility. Right? So that was the view of the Ran. Right? The Ran maintained that there's an additional concern here. What's the Ran's concern? According to Rabbeinu Tam, who the Shaar HaTzion quotes, Rabbeinu Tam is in the Sefer HaYashar. So I don't want to put a Sefer HaYashar on the Marmar Komos because it would be hard to track down, but the Shaar HaTzion quotes the Sefer HaYashar. Right, so according to the Rabbeinu Tam, the issue is the same. The issue is Chitui B'Chal. But according to the Ran, what's the concern? Concern is what's known as Mechzik Mevashel. It looks like cooking. Now, it's an important question. It's also not always fully attended to as to what is the concern of Mechzik Mevashel. What does that mean? Now, what are we worried about? So it's interesting that you're so sure about that. I mean, might be a possibility. I don't know if it's necessarily the most likely possibility, but it seems to be that it's the distinctive perception. So you have, especially you have the word mechsi, which means looks like, so sounds like it's an appearance issue. So maybe that directs us most immediately to Mar Zion, but there are other possibilities as well, which may even end up being more likely. So there are at least two other possibilities.
Maybe also because it looks like it may come to bring about an actual...
Right, so that's probably a more likely possibility, right? Which I guess is actually a form of self-Mar Zion. That if Mar Zion is a concern that you'll lead other people to make a mistake, so theoretically, you could do that to yourself also, because you're in the habit of doing something, and you're not able to differentiate between this and when it's really problematic. The same way we're worried about an observer not knowing, you can worry about yourself, that you also get the wrong impression because of what you do. So it might be not so fundamentally different than Maariv Sinai. If you ever learn the sugya of Maariv Sinai, it's interesting. So coming up to Shemitah is a major factor of Maariv Sinai. Maariv Sinai is a major theme in Shemitah. I once wrote an article about this. So the concern of Maariv Sinai, it's not 100% clear what Maariv Sinai is about. Maariv Sinai has Beirim, which are mutually exclusive. Right? There are some who say that it's a concern that you'll lead people to sin. People will see you doing something, they'll think that it's an Avera, and they'll think that it's Mutter. You know, they'll think that it's something else, and they'll think that you're allowed to do that something else, and that will create a problem. Or the other concern is that people will think bad of you. People will think that you're sinning. And why do we care about that? So right, it's a din daraisa, b'yisim nikiyim. That maybe this is a drabbanan form of a din daraisa. Now they tell that story about the Chafetz Chaim, that the Chafetz Chaim was once traveling to a city to go speak about Tiflis Lashon Hara, and the driver asked him where he's going. He said he's going to Beis Tinek. And the driver said, oh, you're very lucky because today's a great day to be in Tinek because Chafetz Chaim is speaking. So the Chafetz Chaim wanted to be modest, so he said, oh, that guy, he's not such a big deal. He's not so great, he's not so worth hearing. So the driver said, what? No one insults the Chafetz Chaim in my car. And he kicks him out of the wagon and he lets the Chafetz Chaim sit in disgrace on the street for the avera of disgracing the Chafetz Chaim. So Chafetz Chaim reportedly said that after that he said, I learned from this episode that you also shouldn't speak Lashon Hara about yourself. So allegedly, when Rav Soloveitchik heard this story, he said, I knew that already. It's a pasuk in Chumash, it's in Nikiyim. The Torah says you have to worry about your reputation. You're not allowed to say, I don't care, let people say whatever they want. There's a din that you have to try to maintain a good reputation. So some understand Maariv Sinai to be about that. So the problem is they're mutually exclusive because it can't be the same thing. Right? It can't be that we're worried that people will think you're an Avarian and think that you're teaching what's right to do. You know, it's going to be one or the other. Either they'll think you're a sinner and they'll think bad of you, or they'll think that what you're doing is mutter and they'll learn from you, but probably it can't be both. So when is it one, when is the other? That's a whole discussion. But it could be that if Maariv Sinai is about misleading people, so maybe that's not so different from a concern that you're going to come to do it. That maybe we have to worry that you're going to not be able to differentiate. That's what happens all the time, right? People are not always on top of what the distinction is between action A and action B, and they say, well, I do action A all the time. The rabbi never told me it was a problem, so presumably I could do action B too. And this is one of the psychologies that Chazal tapped into. And it's, you know, the older you get, the more you appreciate how necessary it is. And again, this is just kind of what we want to draw out when we see some of these gezeiros, that Chazal are aware that people are not always completely able to make chilukim where they are appropriate. And that you think that, okay, so if this is mutter, that's mutter. And the fact that this may be fundamentally different from that in some core way, people are not always aware, and they are medamin milsa l'milsa on their own. So Chazal make these general policies. So it could be that that's the concern. But it could also be, and this is a particular idea that Rav Schechter has focused on and made a major contribution in this area. I think we've talked about this a little bit this year, but maybe not so much. That when you're dealing with Dinim D'Rabbanan and Hilchos Shabbos, that there are at least two types. Right, we've talked about this year. Maybe not. Definitely 2 years ago we spoke about it. That there is a concern that you have a gezeira, which basically means a concern something will happen. And you have a concept called a malacha d'rabbanan, which is different than an issa d'rabbanan, or a gezeira d'rabbanan. But a malacha d'rabbanan is a malacha, which doesn't fit all the rules of the malacha. So it's not the malacha d'raisa, there's something lacking. But Chazal decided that this act is enough in common with the malacha, that it should have a status of malacha, but coming from a d'rabbanan place. So it's possible that mechzik mevashel is an act of bishul d'rabbanan. Maybe that's what it means. That it means it looks so much like bishul, and it's part of the bishul process. It's there for food preparation purposes. So that maybe that should have a stigma of Bishul associated with it, not just because of what it might lead to. That's itself an Aveira Drabbanan. It's a Malacha Drabbanan. And if you read, Rav Shechter has the essay about this in Eretz HaTzvi, so he notes that there are various nafkaminas, that we're more machmir about Malachas Drabbanan than we are about Gezeira's Drabbanan. As he notes there, for example, one of the issues of Malachas Shinitzvich HaLagufa, which is a very good illustration of this. So if we assume, like most of the Rishonim, that Malach Shin Tzrich L'Gufa is a Drabbanan, but there's still room to ask, what kind of Drabbanan is it? Is it that it's really not a Malach at all, and therefore it's just that Chazal asked it because it could lead to doing a Malach? Or no, we could say, really, it's a Malach. You're doing the exact act that the Torah prohibited. But there's a technical exemption because it doesn't fit the same purpose. So that's very ripe to be in this category of a malacha d'rabbanan. You're really doing the whole malacha, just the Torah gave a loophole for it. So Chazal closed up the loophole and said it's a gzeira d'rabbanan, it's a malacha d'rabbanan. So that has all kinds of nafkaminas, and that's an issue as well. So it could be that once we talk about this issue, you're physically doing something, and presumably a malacha d'rabbanan also has to be active, because it would have to have the rules of a malacha. So, but now once we've moved into active territory with Achzara Hanacha, maybe it could be a malacha d'rabbanan. So again, this Mechzik Mevashel only comes in because now we're doing something active. But maybe now once we talk about these d'rabbanan as opposed to Shehiyah, maybe we're opening up Mechzik Mevashel as a possibility. Maybe that's malacha d'rabbanan. Remember, by the way, when we talked about this semester, we talked about this, we talked about, it's a good Chazar opportunity, we talked about Shnayim Shaso. So Shnayim Shaso, if we assume that that's a Drabbanan in Shabbos, so what kind of a Drabbanan is it? Is it a Gezeira Drabbanan, because we don't want you to come to do a Malacha, or is it really a Malacha Drabbanan, which was a similar kind of question, that essentially, do we say you're doing a Malacha, but you have this out because it's with another person, but maybe still the Drabbanan that prohibits it then is granting it Malacha status. So, in any event, so this is going to be a difference, the fact that once it's active, so then maybe it could theoretically be a malacha d'rabbanan, and that might have its own rules. So, we'll just we'll have to stop in a second. We'll just mention how this plays out with one other point. That, so there is a machlokus harishonim, Tosfos and the Ran, about can you put cold food on the oven right before Shabbos? So Tosfos prohibits this, and that fits in terms of the concern of Chitur G'cholim, that maybe we're concerned that you'll have Chitur G'cholim happening on Shabbos. But according to the Ran, that if the issue is that it's Mechzik Mevashel, so if it's a time when Bishul itself is Mutter, so then how could Mechzik Mevashel be possible? So that machlokis is the shitasim in terms of how to understand what exactly the issue is. So I'll just quickly recap what we spoke about, but just again, I want you to understand what we've done today and how this plays into our agenda. So what we did today is to lay out what the Isser D'Rabbanans are and how they plug into certain principles of Chazal's policies in terms of Din D'Rabbanan and what conceptual ideas they touch upon. So hopefully that's a valuable foundation, and then tomorrow we'll be able to fill in more specifics in terms of how they play out. So just to quickly recap what we spoke about the fact that these gzeiras exist, and we have to try to keep an eye out for what they represent, either about the malacha that it's protecting or about just how Chazal operates in general. And we talked about a little bit about what Hatmana is, about a little bit about what Shehiyah is, the question about whether Shehiyah and Hatmana share the same purpose, about the Machlokis, Chananiah, and Chachamim, about when Shehiyah applies, or essentially if Shehiyah applies, the way the Gemara puts it, according to the Chananiah's position, maybe there really isn't Shehiyah at all, how Hachzara and Hanacha introduce a new element, the question of the concern of Chitoy B'Chalim, what is that about? Is that a Malacha of Bishul, or is it a Malacha of Mavir, or some combination of both? The issue of what is the machlokas Chananiah Chachamim, is it about whether there's a daraisa to cook after Machl ben Jusoy, or is it about just how likely it is that you're going to do it? How in general this is a question whether we're talking about motivation or iser, and that's the suffix that one could have in that two-word Rashi and Daf Yidches and Beis. And then once you talk about the activists, or whether that involves a new element, and whether, like Rabbi Natam, it's a continuation of the Chita B'Cholam issue, or is it this issue of Mechzik Mevashel? We talked a little bit about how the Drabbana and the Mechzik Mevashel could be seen either, so basically three ways. Maybe it's a Marasayan concern, maybe it's a Gezeira concern, maybe those are the same, or maybe it's Malacha Drabbana. We talked a little bit about what Malacha Drabbana is, and then we saw how this Machlokus between the Ran and Rabbi Natam could also translate in Ran and Tosfos about the cold food on the fire before Erev Shabbos, and Bez Hashem, tomorrow we'll see a little bit more about that. All right, everyone should have a wonderful day. I'll see you all bright and early.